got their old pieces calling in the bonds of love we meet for the world anew.
Welcome to Muffin Talk.
Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. This is Muffin Talk brought to you by the initiative Titi Pounamu, Study and Joy. Muffin Talk is a weekly radio program to which I invite guests to talk about their work and their passion for issues of community programs, social justice, Bible studies, or the Catholic Church. My interviews are done in the studio of Planet FM or via Zoom. Today, my visitor is Professor Thomas O'Loughlin. Tom, a very warm welcome and hi to my Torah radio program.
Hi, it's good to be back with you again.
Professor Thomas O'Loughlin, in short Tom, is originally from Dublin, Ireland. He is an ordained priest and emeritus professor of historical theology at the University of Nottingham in the UK. He has visited New Zealand several times and has given presentations on different topics in the area of liturgy. Tom, we have just celebrated Mission Sunday, and Pope Francis was quoted in this context with the beautiful words, "Prayer in which God touches and moves our hearts should make us ever more open to the need of our brothers and sisters for dignity and freedom, as well as our responsibility to care for all creation." Now, in times of pandemics, the interconnectedness with our brothers and sisters is more obvious than ever. How do you feel about this at the moment in England and Ireland?
Well, I think at the moment we're going through what's sometimes been called the second spike, and we're back with people falling ill by the thousand. The numbers of deaths are rising, and hospitals' admissions are rising. And I think there's a sense among people, we just don't know what's the best thing to do. And we're all exhausted to a certain extent by the pandemic. But curiously, you know, one of the upsides of this is that suddenly people are becoming aware that there are other values than just one's economic contribution, because even though we're terrified by the loss of work and we're terrified by redundancies, we're also discovering just how much we actually need one another and how interconnected we are. And I think one of the issues for Catholics at the time of Mission Sunday is to realize that always we've had a situation in the church whereby if we're going to engage in mission, we have to have some common ground. If I'm going to talk to you, the presupposition of any conversation is that we share some language. If everyone listening to this program, the first thing that connects us is we share something. We all understand the language I'm speaking now. We also have to understand, if I'm going to make a statement that isn't going to be totally bizarre, we also have to share certain cultural values. So before I can talk to you about faith, before I can talk to you about values, before I can talk to you about the Christian vision of the universe, there has to be something that we hold in common. And this has been something that, of course, Christians have been seeking since the time Luke wrote the Acts of the Apostles in the early second century. He has this wonderful scene of Paul arriving in Athens. And Paul, he's here in the home of Greek philosophy, and he tells us that Luke tells us that Paul is going to meet some of the philosophers. He's going to meet some of the thinkers. But Paul immediately needs to have something, a common element. And the common element he seeks is Greek culture. He says, as one of your own philosophers has said. And then he also needs to seek common religious experience. And so he says, I've walked through your city. I've seen all the statues of the gods, but I've also noticed you have a statue to an unknown god. So Paul doesn't say, here's something completely new to you. He starts by trying to find a common ground with the Athenians. And of course, 100 years in the middle of the second century, Justin Martyr, he deliberately tries to form in his first apology a common ground with Greek or Roman society, particularly Greek or Roman society in Italy, on the basis of philosophy. So he's the one who says, we call Christ the Logos, but you know that the Logos animates the world, and your desire to know who the Logos is, this is whom we call the Christ. This is the man Jesus. So again, he finds a common ground. Aquinas famously found a common ground in that he adopted and took over the philosophy of Aristotle. And he saw there, he goes to the philosophy of Aristotle because he wants to be able to show that there is a continuity between human wisdom and Christian wisdom. And that if Christian wisdom is really also the wisdom of the God who is the creator of all things, the two wisdoms can't be in contradiction to one another. And so Aquinas will say the truth can never war against itself. The unity of the truth must be something absolutely fundamental, and we must seek ways to understand the differences. So he engages in this massive work of harmonization between Greek wisdom and Christian wisdom. You're from Germany, so probably the greatest German theologian of the 20th century, Karl Rahner, professor in the University of Freiburg. He died as a man of 80 in 1984, and the theme that runs through his writings is the need to find a common ground between the situation of humanity, particularly humanity as he encountered it in Germany, and the fears and aspirations of people and the desperation of people in Germany. He's to seek a common ground that will allow him to talk meaningfully about the Christ within his society. And so again, we think of Karl Rahner today as, gosh, that guy who wrote all those big, very difficult to read books. But we forget that the ambition of Karl Rahner was actually to find a common language with the people of who in the middle of the 20th century have developed this enormous technical ability and yet also find themselves alienated within humanity and within their sense of the alienation within the universe. So the question then today is, if we're going to engage in mission, if we're going to take up the call that's implicit in Pope Francis's prayer with which you began, how do we find a common ground with people who are not Christians? What language will we use to show our vision in a way that they can see that it fits with their vision? And one thing I find that's very useful in this is that in 2015, just 5 years ago, the UN adopted 17 goals. They're called the Sustainable Development Goals. And the hope is that by 2030, there will be definite progress along the way to these goals. And a lot of them are terribly obvious. Like, for instance, we know that we're poisoning the seas. We've got to stop poisoning the seas. But what amazes me is I know lots of Christians who will talk about mission. And they will I hear lots of sermons on mission. And then I hear lots of people involved in the environmental movement and people involved in non-governmental bodies trying to work for everything from reforestation to the quality of food to the alleviation of poverty. And they're also talking about their sustainable development goals, but they're almost in two completely different camps. So you say to a group of Christians, could you name even one of the 17 sustainable development goals of the UN? And they say, no, I don't really know about that. The UN is something we talk about in one part of our brain. I say, well, do you think promoting education in the developing world? Oh, yeah, that probably is one of them. Yeah, they and then you talk to people in the non-governmental sector involved in the ecological movement. Say, well, how do you think the ecological movement fits with the Christian vision? Oh, I don't know. I'm no longer practicing. My wife practices.
But
they don't read Laudato Si. But even the people who but the people who do read Laudato Si, they tend to think of it as just a religious document. They don't realize that if God is the creator of all, we have to have a real dialogue between the ecological movement and the Christian movement, and Christians have to see the ecological movement as part of the common ground. And it's not just, oh, well, yeah, okay, nice ideas. It is actually forming a common language for Christian mission. So, for instance, goal one, end poverty. End poverty in all its forms, everywhere. That's the first goal. Well, ending poverty is at the very heart of Jewish and Christian spirituality all down the centuries. You cannot worship God if your next door neighbor is hungry. You have to be aware that the God whom we worship is not the God of the powerful, which is one of the default ways that human beings think of God. We think of God as an extension of the power of kings or emperors or whatever. Hence we use phrases like God Almighty. The word, we use the word Lord now, but of course Lord is originally the guy just down the road who's in charge. But it's the God who is on the side of the poor, the God of the Anoim. So here is a development goal that is a UN development goal. This is part of the common language of our culture, but it is also a part of our Christian language, and therefore it can form part of the dialogue and common discourse that mission and fulfilling the prayer that Pope Francis uttered here and now. And then you can take it, the second goal, end hunger, achieve food security. Well, that's in a sense a spill out from the no poverty. But then you could move on to the goals four and five I see are as interconnected. Goal four is ensure equitable and inclusive education. But think of the vast missionary endeavor of Christians around the world setting up mission schools. Sometimes they were just seen as a spin-off of teaching catechism or teaching the Bible. But where mission has really put down deep roots, it's where education has been seen as helping a community come to a new level of understanding of itself, a new level of development. So education is a gift that Christians give, not because it might get converts, but because it is a good thing. But Christians have been massively involved in education in mission, and here it is as something that we can actually see as part of a larger human awareness that so many of the countries of the UN have actually adopted these goals.
And we shouldn't forget that UN stands for United Nations.
Yes. It's not just a talk shop. It is a vision of that nation shall speak peace unto nation.
And isn't also the word church or ecclesia a group that of people that belong together that have a similar call?
Yes, it's a gathering. It's people who are it's not the same as a club. It's people who come together. The curious thing is, there's also another goal 5 is achieve gender equality and empower all women and girls. And in our secular heads, we know that if you can improve the lot of women in the society, if you can improve healthcare for women, if you can improve education for women, that has a massive force multiplying effect in changing the society. So the education of women has to have a certain priority. And of course, if God loves every creature, gender equality should be part of a Christian thing. But we know that when we put on our religious hats, we still have major problems here. Catholics in particular, Catholics and Eastern Orthodox, have a real problem with thinking of women and men as equal. They do think very heavily still in terms of the paradigm of God is the paradigm of male. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, I hear counseling, well, why worry about inclusive language in the liturgy? You know, so what? You know, God made the world. God is greater than gender. A lot of Catholics, even the very mention of the ordination of women. So there are some places where actually these goals remind us just how we have to actually start checking our own theology. So it's not just a case of, oh, well, they're all just nice things and we can adopt them. They actually come back on us and say, hey, what the culture, these sustainable development goals, they cause me to actually ask myself awkward religious questions within my Christianity, within my Catholicism, within my whatever church one happens to belong to. So this, whenever one engages in dialogue, the problem is it's never just, hey, I'm going to engage in dialogue. Let me just tell you everything I want to tell you. To engage in dialogue means that you tell me things as well. Like, famously, when Aquinas engaged in dialogue with Aristotle, with the works of Aristotle, he had to suddenly come to terms with the fact that Aristotle's system is built up empirically. The Christianity of the Middle Ages tended to be deductive. And Aquinas suddenly had to realize, maybe we don't know everything. Maybe we actually have to discover new things. So again, just as the dialogue with Aristotle altered the way Aquinas had to think out Christian faith, so engaging with the Sustainable Development Goals brings up awkward questions for us. And there's a very interesting example of that in Sustainable Development Goal 13. Take urgent action to combat climate change. Well, we all know that we're beginning to accept that climate change is a reality. but people have been, scientists have been saying this for the last nearly half a century. It was in the 1970s that we were talking about the dangers of aerosol cans and the ozone layer and how it could affect the climate. That's in the time of our parents and grandparents. And yet, we know that is going to make calls on us as demanding, and in the way we will change, that makes a call on us for conversion, and it's conversion that is part of the whole Christian vocation of conversion.
But they also, when we're talking about the lockdown, for example, there have been some statistics how the lockdown and the fact that people stayed at home improved the situation in the seas, and there were more birds, and it is amazing what we could discover, that when you're not traveling by plane all the time, how that helps the world to repair itself a little bit, using the Jewish term of tikkun olam, to repair the world.
Yes. And of course, it's one thing to talk about conversion when it's conversion in the sense of I must learn how to pray. But what if it's I must learn not to travel as much? That's a different type of they're both conversions. They both require metanoia. They both require a new way of thinking and a new way of acting and a new embedded vision. So again, there is this dialogue. So I find the Sustainable Development Goals a wonderful common ground by which I can talk as a member of my society to the people around me, but I can also authentically talk as a Christian to that society, and I can see these as a realistic issue that I will raise with a politician, but it is also a realistic way of fleshing out that prayer of Pope Francis.
Definitely, and also the sustainable, I think that Pope Francis with his Laudato Si, that fits so well to the sustainable goals. And I remember that there were already the goals that in 2015 poverty should be ended, but that was not achieved, and it was even getting worse to where it was 20 years before.
Well, there's a very interesting example of that in Goal 15, protect, restore, and promote sustainable use of terrestrial ecosystems. And the very language of the Sustainable Development Goal I don't know whether one echoes the other, but the exact same language is found in Laudato Si, sections 32 to 42. So if you want to understand something like Sustainable Development Goal 15, protect, restore, and promote sustainable terrestrial ecosystems, sustainably manage forests, combat deforestation, and halt and reverse land degradation, you can actually find a commentary on why that is a Christian thing in Laudato Si 32 to 42. And of course, I was talking... Unfortunately, there is a problem in Christianity at the moment, in that there is a danger that Christianity is almost seen as the religion of the alt-right. Mm-hmm. And the vision that, oh, yeah, well, you know, I don't believe in climate change. I don't like Pope Francis. Devil take the hindmost. It's all a myth. And, well, that's the sort of language that some of the religious supporters, sadly, many of them Catholics, of people like President Trump. But, if you don't like reading Laudato Si to understand Development Goal 15, well, you can always just read Genesis 1. Every plant, every tree, every bird. The Christian vision is that all these things were put there in their diversity and their richness and their right to exist by the divine will.
But also we have received the knowledge to know about the warnings of nature. We have, because it's something that was given to us that we know about it. So if we know about it, we have to act accordingly. Otherwise, there are also examples in the Bible that show what happened if the warnings are not taken seriously.
And that raises an even more fundamental problem. There is in Christianity today a group who are anti-knowledge, anti-science, as if, oh no, I don't want that, I've got religion. Well, that of course completely negates the tradition that goes right back, you know, whether it's Karl Rahner in the 20th century or Aquinas 800 years before that, or Augustine 800 years before that, or Justin Martyr 300 years before that, that we actually take human knowledge seriously as a gift of God, and it is the Holy Spirit who allows us to understand and know.
I think that these are really good words to end the interview. Thank you very much, Tom, for this. And I think that if we just consider this as really as a gift, so we have a knowledge and we have to work accordingly and act accordingly. Thank you very much, Tom, for this interview. And I'd just like to also draw the attention to a couple of events that are coming up. We have Zoom sessions with Brother Kieran Fenn on the Gospel According to Mark, which is the gospel for the new church year that starts with the first Sunday of Advent. The Zoom sessions will take place on the four Fridays of November, starting with the 6th of November from 7 to 8:30 p.m. And there is also a talk about interfaith and interreligious dialogue. There is a webinar organized by the Religious Diversity Center in Auckland, and that will take place on the 29th of October, 7:30 to 8:30. The topic is faith and business. So we've just heard about faith and environment and the development goals. This is faith and business. So faith is not separate from the reality. And then also the retreat with Eamon Butler is on the topic, Who Am I? Reflecting on Our Identity in God, on Saturday, the 28th of November, 10:30 to 4 p.m. And all events are also on my website at www.studyjoy.nz. And I'd like to thank very much Professor Tom O'Loughlin for this interview. And I wish you all a good Friday and a good week ahead. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Justice and mercy and peace are the songs in our hearts.